Right, hi everyone. I'm going to run through the research, the key findings that we found, and some of the big recommendations that we have. So, this is setting out the contents of the report. We very much tried to create get a real sense of the landscape across London's private rented sector, thinking about spatial patterns, different types of tenants and landlords. And how this all fits into the policy framework. I would say that what we've done really is very much the beginnings of a picture. I think we've realised quite early on that there's a lot that we don't know, and I think there's a lot that no one really knows about them, about the sector, particularly about landlords, and we'll come back to that later. We have suggested that there are four key challenges that London boroughs are facing in terms of how to engage their landlords in energy efficiency. We take each one of these four in turn, and we present some practical approaches that we think boroughs can take to respond to each of these challenges, things that they can just get on with now. But also we have a number of policy recommendations at the end, which are thinking about how to improve the sector's energy performance in the long term. So just a few key facts that I think that are very important to this agenda. Private rented sector fares very badly in terms of decent homes, unsurprisingly in comparison to social renting, which has obviously had quite a lot of grant funding for retrofit over the years, but also in comparison with owner occupation, which I think is quite surprising because they tend to kind of languish at the bottom together. A number of London boroughs have talked in their reports about very high rates of excess cold hazards, you know, category one major hazards. And therefore, it's not particularly surprising. Therefore, that there's the private rented sector is rife with fuel poverty. Considering that, you know, if your bills are higher, then it's going to be more difficult to fund. You're going to be more likely to be in fuel poverty. So standards are fairly low across a lot of the sector. Yet it's pretty expensive to rent, particularly so in London. London rents are significantly higher than elsewhere in London. It's more expensive to rent a one-bed flat in London than it is to rent a four-bed or more in most of the regions apart from the southeast. so this is where we took the census data from 2001 and 2011, and we just wanted to get a picture of how the private rented sector is rapidly growing and where. It's unsurprising to see that private renting has very traditionally been a sort of inner London tenure, and that remains so in 2011. There's a sort of hotspot of Westminster and Kensington and Chelsea. However, the biggest increases in those 10 years have actually been in East London boroughs, Tower Hamlets, Hackney, and Enfield have all doubled. And Barking and Dagenham is, I think, one and a half times what it was in 2001. So there's particular pressures on these more densely private renting boroughs to increase standards. So thinking about who tenants are, this has actually came from the GLA Housing in London report that says in 2012 the private rented sector was fairly evenly spread across income quartiles. And I mean, this is an oversimplification, but you know, it's interesting to think that even if you're in a more affluent income quintile, you might still struggle to be an owner occupier in London, and I think that perhaps since this chart was made, I think there's a growing number of the lower and middle income households in the private rented sector. We think this is probably to do with the fact that a lot of people who would traditionally have been social renting are now finding themselves having to move into private renting due to a lack of supply on the social side. So there's an increasing number of vulnerable tenants in the private rented sector, and we talk quite a lot about one type, which is homeless households in temporary accommodation, and we'll get back to that. So what can we say about landlords? It's been a struggle to find a lot of data. I think we looked at the main data sources and found that the majority of them are very tiny samples and probably fairly biased samples, considering the sorts of people who will fill in or do such surveys. Nevertheless, they all seem to point to a high level of individual and one property landlords in England. And I think this is very likely to be the case in London, considering that if you have got a property in London, you're going to hang on to it if you possibly can, because your capital growth is so good. We weren't able to find an estimate of how many landlords in London there were, so we've come up with one ourselves. It's not just plucked out of the air, don't worry, but it's based on the number of households, and then we found an average number of the average portfolio size, and we've come up with an estimate of 360,000 landlords. That's a lot of landlords. And then we thought about the accreditation levels, considering that accreditation is the way that, certainly from the GLA's perspective, one of the major ways that the standards can be improved. Accreditation levels are extremely low at the moment. They're growing, but they're extremely low. The London Landlords Accreditation Scheme, which is by far the biggest in London, the numbers of people landlords accredited on that in August 2014, compared with our estimate, was just under 4%. We talk quite a lot about the policy framework in the report. I'm not going to go into too much detail here. I'm just going to remind ourselves of the most recent legislation found in the Energy Act 2011, which set the scene for the secondary legislation, which I've outlined there. I'm sure we all know about the two deadlines that are very likely to be coming up. The consultation is finished, but the results haven't been announced yet. But it's very likely that it will be something around the two standards that we saw in the consultation. And I think the important thing to think about here is that local authorities will be the enforcers of this this agenda and these regulations, and therefore engaging with landlords is essential to making that happen. So these are the four challenges that we've set out in the report, the biggest challenges for London boroughs to engage with their landlords, and I'm going to take each one in turn. So the unfavourable funding landscape. Retrofit is extremely difficult without grant. I think, as I said before, there's been an awful lot of money put into social housing to improve standards, and you can see that in the improvements that have been made. There's been political will there on that side that perhaps we haven't seen for the private sector. So that it's just an enormous challenge. The Green Deal has is in part a solution to this, but uptake has been very low. And there are a number of smaller funding pots that have been around in the last couple of years. A lot of them are coming to an end. Good news is that the Green Deal Home Improvement Fund, there's another £100 million announced on that. I don't think it's clear when it's going to be available. Nevertheless, the smaller funding pots, there's only so much they can do. Second challenge, physical barriers. London's private renters are often in properties that are old, poorly insulated, archaic boilers. The properties are often very hard to treat, and there's an additional legislative burden often of being in conservation areas. So the map here is overlapping high densities of private renting with conservation areas, and the green areas are the sort of the problem areas, which again a lot in inner London, but there's quite a lot actually, you know, scattered around the sort of middle tier. Thirdly, there's we thought the lack of communication channels available to individual landlords is a serious challenge. Smaller landlords just wouldn't seek the attention of their local authority in the same way that we as individuals probably wouldn't seek, you know, to know our local authorities, particularly unless we needed to. Therefore, communication is very difficult because it's not clear how that connection can be made. And fourthly, weak incentives for both landlords and tenants to act on this. We all know there's a serious market imbalance, housing market imbalance, where supply is fairly low and demand is huge. And we think that this both disincentivizes landlords and disempowers tenants. So on the landlord side, the term uses a split incentive where the person funding or part funding the costs is not the person who's going to accrue the benefits in terms of the savings. Other benefits that are suggested for landlords include lower voids, you know, fewer voids. In London, not really an issue. Demand is so high, the landlord is aware that if a tenant moves out, they'll probably be able to get someone else the next day. And then, you know, on the flip side, tenants are probably so glad to have a home that they may not be in a rush to start complaining about things that are wrong with it. They may not feel particularly inspired to do so if their contract is short. They can just get on with it and move on and get something better next time. Or they may not feel empowered to do so. Now, this is the area known as retaliatory evictions. And we say in the report that there's a second reading of a private member's bill on retaliatory evictions. That happened on Friday, and from the reports I've read, it was talked out, filibustered, as they say. Out of it, there was no solution, and that halted the proceedings. Okay, so I'm going to quickly run through some of the suggestions that we've had for boroughs to approach and get past some of these challenges. So, back to the funding landscape. Firstly, we think that it's very important to keep abreast of what is available in terms of national and pan-London grants and support. There are likely to be some landlords who will be interested one way or another in retrofit, and it's important for boroughs to be able to present those opportunities clearly to landlords. Probably more importantly, we would say, promote the smaller scale works. It's going to be extremely difficult to convince a landlord to do major works that they're going to have to at least part fund themselves. However, there are smaller works that can be done that are more cost effective and less disruptive, and there's sort of quick wins in terms of making some improvements to thermal comfort and reducing hazards. On the barriers side, physical barriers, I think this is something that Chris from Haringey will pick up a little bit, but retrofit is a very technical process, so it would be very useful if boroughs can provide the technical support and advice at all stages, so right from the initial inquiry, right through to planning, and eventually, hopefully, to the installation. And I think, as I say, that Chris from Haringey will pick this up a bit in his presentation. Maybe working in concert, focus on a lot of boroughs may think it's very difficult for them to have a marketable retrofit offer. It might be more important to just think about the poor standards and how to help their most vulnerable tenants and raise standards. And on this, we think that developing a balanced enforcement strategy is the way forward, which a lot of boroughs will be doing already. I've put the word balanced in there because I think the thing that we've discovered, I think, that is important is that boroughs need to balance raising standards for their most vulnerable tenants with keeping keeping up the supply of private housing in their boroughs. Landlords are extremely important, and the private rented sector is very important to boroughs at the moment because supply is so low. So it's a delicate balancing act. In terms of the communications channels, I think the first two suggestions that we have here are really about what to do in spite of the lack of communication. So if you have a retrofit program that you feel like you can market it at the landlords that you think will be most likely to take it up. So market it at your larger landlords who, if they have a large portfolio, they may be able to get quite good economies of scale. And will not be so instantly put off by the idea of paying an upfront cost. A particularly good group of larger landlords that we think would be good to target are those in temporary housing frameworks or providers of temporary housing. We think this is somewhere where boroughs can really use their influence to work with landlords who rely on boroughs in part for a portion of their business. There's really something that we think boroughs can do there to help to strongly encourage those landlords to take up retrofit. and improve standards in their properties. But thirdly on here, and probably more important than all of this, is what to do about the lack of communication with everybody else. We've got to improve data on landlords. There are numerous reasons we set out in the report of why we think this is important. But in terms of this challenge, it's just, you know, you can't communicate with landlords if you don't know who they are. We need to do something to gain a better understanding of landlords, where they are and their motivations. How you do that is a big question. I don't think there's going to be a national register coming up anytime soon. There are local opportunities. I think London Borough of Newham have shown that borough licensing has been very effective. They now know over 90% of their landlords, but this is not going to be possible in a lot of boroughs. And finally, looking at the weak incentives for landlords and tenants. There are new institutionally invested, well-managed private rented sector properties now coming up into London. They will make the market more competitive. It may take a while, but they will eventually do that. So raising awareness with your existing landlords that things should be getting more competitive soon could be a way forward. Similarly, there is very little evidence at the moment for the value added, for the sales uplift or rental value uplift of a landlord's property if they were to retrofit. However, it could be that, you know, in the long term, it's possible to get that evidence, and more proactive boroughs could think about how to build that evidence and perhaps what to do with that evidence when it comes through. And then finally, on the tenant side, we think boroughs could help tenants be aware of the fact that from 2016 they will be able to ask for improvements. But also we think it's important to improve the security of tenure for tenants, just so that they have a reason to want to do it. So we think sort of campaigning for longer tenancies is pretty fundamental. Okay, last slide. There are 8 recommendations that we have in the report. I'm not going to go through them now. Instead, I'm just going to quickly run through 4 sort of overarching conclusions that we found from the research. Firstly, the current financial landscape isn't sufficient for the deep level of retrofit that's required of our private rented sector. Secondly, I've said it already, but a balance needs to be struck between improving standards, particularly for the most vulnerable tenants, but also maintaining a quantum of housing. The private rented sector is the fastest growing tenure in London, and it's likely to be the dominant one soon. So it's important to maintain good supply. And thirdly, is related to that, the need to foster good relationships between authorities and landlords in the long term. This isn't just about 2016 and 2018, this is about a long-term strategy for London. And finally, lack of data just makes everything more challenging. And we think if we could improve that, we could make a lot of the other steps that we've talked about easier. That's it from me. Oh, sorry, that's not it from me. full report will be available very soon on our website, I think sometime today. And also quickly to say that thanks to a grant that we've received from Trust for London, we're going to be advancing a lot more work on the private rented sector on various different aspects. You'll be hearing more about that in the new year. And thanks to everyone for their involvement so far, and please keep involved. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.